the knife. Knife. That's for Job.
I was going to say.
It was requested that we return to me just cutting off the music and saying linoleum knife all by itself without any other formal introduction because a friend missed that.
That.
Sort of, I didn't even think about the fact that we had changed.
No, me neither, but apparently... That. You know, somebody missed the old ways.
But I'm willing, you know, like, I do what I do for you beautiful people.
It's for the fans.
I didn't want that music to stop.
No, it's pretty great.
I wanted that to keep going.
Godzilla goes bananas.
That is theme music from Monster Island's Decisive Battle, : Godzilla's Son. Mm. 1967. Known in the United States to all you white devils as Son of Godzilla.
There we go.
Yeah.
So this is Linoleum Knife, a podcast about movies.
This is Linoleum Knife. We are a podcast about movies. My name is Dave White. I'm with movies.com, and you are...
Alonzo Duralde with therap.com. Yes. And What the Flick.
That is correct. So, you know...
currently with Outfest.
Currently nonstop with Outfest, which is why, at this particular moment... We are, it's early.
Yes. By our standards. I mean, well, you're normally up at this hour anyway.
I am, but I'm not ready
you're not
to,
chatty.
I'm not ready to do things just yet. Like, yeah. I get up really early, just naturally, and normally I don't have to talk to anybody until around 7 or 7:30, which is when you... wake up, but that's not even really talking, because when you wake up in the morning, you don't want anybody talking at you, looking at you, being near you,
breathing on me,
breathing, touching you, like nothing until you've had time to, you know, like wake up, have a cup of coffee, and like look intently at your phone for a long time. And then I know you're beginning to wake up when you start saying things like, oh, geez. And then I go, what's wrong? And then you tell me some ridiculous thing on Facebook that merits the overstatement of your, you know, the first upset of the day.
It's the best part of waking up.
Yeah. And so, yeah. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. Right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Not our usual podcasting hours, but not it's the only time all. Of day that I had to do it. So
today, because of Outfest.
Yes.
Next week it'll be a whole other
thing.
Cock
yeah.
up because right. of Outfest.
Although ideally next week we'll have a very special guest because of Outfest, but we'll see if we can make that happen.
Well, I hope the very special guest or guests yes. is available.
Yes, that would be great.
You haven't said who it is in anticipation?
No, because it might not happen.
True, it might not happen. But if it does happen...
What's Adina's line from Absolutely Fabulous? Like, relax, it might not happen.
Yes, relax, it might not happen. If it does happen, mm-hmm. the film nerd people...
Yes.
The people who love to read... about movies.
Right.
They'll be very happy.
Yes. And other people who get all excited at the thought of a special guest may be like, who?
Who? What? But, a nice special guest, if the special guest shows up.
Yes.
I went to Outfest last night.
Yes, you did.
You saw me.
I did.
You rescued me from the general admission line.
Right.
I have a rule in life.
You were handpicked by Springsteen to dance. That's to do right. Dancing in the Dark.
Yes.
You are Courtney Cox.
I am your Courtney Cox. I went to Outfest to see Continental, mm-hmm. the new movie by our pal Malcolm Ingram.
Right, the host of the Cooking with Malcolm Ingram podcast.
Who unfortunately could not be at Outfest.
Yes.
He had to stay home in Toronto. And I have a rule in life, and my rule in life, the number one rule in my life, is no cuts.
Mm.
No taking cuts.
Right.
Nobody takes cuts in front of me. I don't take cuts in front of anybody else.
Mm-hmm. However.
But I got there last night, and I walk in, and there's this monster line waiting to get in, and it said, like, preferred seating, or I don't know what it said. Mm-hmm. And I walk up to the guys, the volunteer dudes, with my ticket, and I go, I have general admission ticket. Where's that line? They go, outside. And I said, really? Outside? Why outside?
As though it were either raining or hot. I mean, it was the sun had gone down by this time,
it
right?
It was still hot outside.
Fine.
And I was like, I was all excited about walking into the DGA with the air conditioning. Because I walked to the DGA from our apartment. And right. So I was, you know, I was a little, as they say in Espanol, pringoso.
Yeah, no, yesterday I walked, that's sticky, basically.
Yeah.
It's when you're like a little bit schwitzy and you're just, your clothes are kind of starting to stick to you.
I was,
I walked from the DGA to the Harmony Gold, which is about two or three blocks yesterday, yeah. And about two-thirds of the way there, I thought, maybe this wasn't such a great idea in July.
So, I walk in there, I'm like, with the air conditioning, and I've got a Take 5 candy bar in my pocket, I'm super excited about that. Have you ever had a Take 5?
Yeah, those are good.
Those are great. Yeah. And the,
they're also not sponsoring this show.
They oughta. I would eat one on the mic every time if they did.
We would lose listeners. There's people that, you know,
you know what?
Those, I don't those care don't about eat on the show people.
I don't care. Sponsorship would mean
well,
everything.
That's true. Yeah. I would smack my way through one.
Especially a candy sponsorship.
True.
How lucky could we get?
How 500 pounds could we get?
Yes. So anyway, this is why I don't want to do a podcast today in the morning. I'm still coughing and you know, needing to blow my nose.
Getting the night out of you.
Yeah, I'm still, yeah. So the,
so they tell you to go outside.
They made me go outside, and I was like, I go outside, and I ask, where's the line? And they go, well, it starts there, so just follow it back. And I'm like,
this will end in tears.
On the way to the half mile long line, it was in DGA 1, Malcolm Ingram, if you're listening, big crowd.
No, I sent him a picture.
Full, packed full of people. And, along the way, I'm seeing all these people I know who are like, hey, Dave, hey, Dave, hey, Dave. They're like, stand in line with us. I'm like, no cuts. No cuts. I don't take cuts. You can save me a seat when you're in there, but I don't take cuts. I get to the back of the line. And there's a volunteer, like, there's a volunteer standing there who says, okay, starting with you, if you could just wrap around this pole. I go, I'm one person. I can't wrap anything. Meanwhile, some other people are moving forward, and I go, I will rap as soon as the folks in front of me start rapping. It'll be a rapper's delight.
Rapping granny.
Yeah. And then you came and pulled me out of line and whisked me into preferred seating.
Look,
which is great.
Why be married to me if I can't give you some VIP?
Yeah, that's...
I even asked, you know, the big boss. I said, hey, can I walk, David? She goes, don't even ask. Of course.
I deserve it.
Absolutely.
I did dishes all day.
Don't yesterday. They know who you are?
I'm Mrs. Alonzo Duralde. Damn.
So now you've actually seen the most recent cut of Continental.
Yes, I have.
I have not seen this updated
it's
one.
It's tight.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Well, because, you know, he showed us that long, rough cut, which was you know.
Right. It wasn't super long. It wasn't
it
like,
was like 2 hours-ish.
Okay. What is it now?
Like 90 minutes.
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah.
Then
so it's
tight.
All tightened up. It's very loving and affectionate. Like, you would think that for a documentary about a bathhouse, it would be sort of, you know,
sleazy or judgmental, you know, or winky.
Yeah. And it's none of that. And the guy, it's really a movie about the guy who ran
Steve,
the place.
Steve Ostro.
And
yeah.
He's, you know, he's a character. And yeah. So,
Frankly, I mean, just when I tell people that he's still alive, I think that people often find that kind of astonishing because we lost so much of that generation, you know,
yes,
during the 80s. So.
Yeah, all those old cats.
Yeah.
And I loved what you did before the screening, too. Oh, no, it wasn't you who did that. It was
What, Joe Keenan?
Joe. who said, how many of you in this audience have actually been to the Continental Baths? And like half a dozen like old dudes are like, I was there!
I got a blowy from Nureyev.
Exactly. Can you say blowy on a clean podcast?
I think
a
so.
A blowy from Nureyev? Is that within the family guidelines
In the watershed? I think we can get away with that.
All right, so we played Son of Godzilla music this week for a very specific reason.
Right.
Pacific Rim.
Kaiju.
Kaiju versus Mecha.
Or, in this case, Jaegers, as they've decided to call them.
Jaeger Schmager. Mecha.
Mecha.
Yeah.
Giant monsters, giant robots.
Giant monsters, giant robots. I really, 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 really love this movie.
I'm going to discuss it based on my experience seeing it.
Yeah.
But I will add the caveat that everybody tells me I have to see it again in a different format.
Yes, you do.
Because I saw it in regular 3D.
That was dumb of you.
I had to go to the first screening, and that was what it was. And it was on the Warner lot, and I figured
dumb of Warner Brothers.
I figured on the Warner lot, they would know how to project a 3D movie correctly.
No. They probably projected it exactly the right way.
All right. Well, all I know is...
But this should not be seen in 3D.
I had visual issues in terms of taking in the giant monsters and the giant robots. I felt like I was seeing bits of them all the time and never like a full-on thing. But then you saw it in 2D and said that you understood what I was talking about, but that wasn't your experience.
Correct.
And then Christy and Matt on What the Flick saw it in 3D IMAX, and they too said that they had a different experience. So I need to see it again either in 3D IMAX or at least in 2D. But I will tell you what I thought based on seeing it in 3D.
Why don't you tell me?
Well, why don't you talk about what it's about first?
So these giant monsters come and then giant robots fight them.
That's pretty much what it's about. That would be the plot synopsis.
There's also some stupid humans.
Yeah, but who cares?
And I will say this. The stupid human story that I liked the most is also the stupid human story that gave me the most trouble.
Really? Which one?
Rinko Kikuchi.
You liked that one the most?
I liked her background story. I liked the scenes of her as a little girl being terrified by the kaiju.
Yeah, that little girl.
She's great. Really,
yeah,
that kid can cry like that, a...
That's a Ponette performance.
Yeah. But...
Adult Rinko Kikuchi.
Adult Rinko Kikuchi
is still crying.
Is still crying, and there's no crying in monster fighting.
No, there's no crying in kaiju.
And
Christy fought me on this one. You know, she's like, no, she's badass. I said, yes, she is, but at the same time, she's also mewling.
But I feel like the movie tries to cut her legs out from under her.
Yes.
A little too much.
It's like what they do to Melissa McCarthy in Identity Thief.
You've got like a woman, they've got the lone woman in the cast.
Right.
I would like a little more female agency, please.
Thank you.
And so...
If you're not going to pass the Bechdel test, give her more of a spine.
Yeah. And I understand that her trauma affected her ability to fight, but I really don't think that it should have. Because Charlie Hunnam's trauma didn't affect his abilities.
No, obviously.
And so it's sort of like, oh, you poor woman.
Yes. Pat.
That was, hey, how about you turn off your phone?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah. The phone blowing up.
Yes.
Your R. Kelly.
Blowing up at 8:24 in the morning.
So humans have to fight the monsters by being inside...
These robots.
The robots and that they called Jaegers, but they're just...
Mecha.
They are mechas.
And it takes two to make a thing go right. One person cannot manage all the stuff in the robots. Two people have to do it, and they have to...
Connect
their brains through something called the drift.
Yeah, which I was really into. I was really into the drift.
But they didn't... I don't think they got enough out of it. Like... We were talking later. I mean, wouldn't you still be carrying all that around later? I mean, the other person's residual, you know, memories and
maybe not
things. I don't know. It seemed like a cool idea they didn't explore deeply enough.
Well, you know what? they had fighting to get to.
Well, yeah, obviously. And again, I'm going to cut this movie tons and tons of slack for the dialogue and the hokey characterizations, because the pleasure that I get out of monster movies has nothing to do with anybody who's a human being.
No.
So,
no.
You know, it's not like when I go back, I don't revisit, you know, Destroy All Monsters for the, you know, character conflicts or the romance.
There are, if we're going to nitpick on that, there are memorable human characters from those early Japanese films. The Mothra twins.
Are they human?
They're two girls.
Yeah, but they're like, they fit in the size of the palm of your hand.
They're still human. They're still little human girls.
I mean, there's the scientist who sacrifices himself in the original Gojira.
Okay, yeah, not even him.
Okay, fine.
The sparkly space ladies from Destroy All Monsters.
Right, but they're aliens, so.
It doesn't matter, they're still people. And so,
would you remember them if they weren't sparkly?
Maybe not.
Okay, then.
But they were sparkly space ladies, okay. And they were villains.
Shiny.
They were memorable because of their sparkliness.
They're
shiny because they're shiny, and they were not nice. Well, they were like, yeah. We are going to destroy you.
Yes, we will set your monsters against you.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, I had a few problems with this film that really didn't have anything to do with the people. I wanted more kaiju.
Sure.
I wanted a more full-on presentation. I wanted to admire them in all of their splendor. Uh-huh. You know, they were always in motion. They were always fighting. There was never a moment where in broad daylight you got to see the majestic kaiju, you know, pause and consider what they were about to stomp next. I would have enjoyed that.
Sure.
I would have also enjoyed more robot destruction. Mm. I feel like the movie was racist against monsters and was asking you to root for the robots.
Oh, you mean you wanted to see the robots destroy things?
More things, more people, more cities, more continents, more robots.
Well, they helicoptered the robots out into the ocean.
I wanted more winning from the kaiju.
I see.
Because I was rooting for the kaiju.
Well, you know.
I am always rooting for the kaiju. The monsters are my friends.
I, for one, welcome our new monster overlords. Yes.
The monsters are my friends. And so I got to back up my friends, the monsters. The reason you should not see this movie in 3D is because there's actually a modern day sort of Gojira environmental message going on. It's very, very subtle. They never address it, really. Well, but visually it exists.
The guy says that.
One sentence.
He says, you know, the aliens had come before, or the kaiju had come before. They destroyed the dinosaurs, but they couldn't live on the Earth, but we've screwed up the climate so much that we basically terraformed our own planet for them.
So they have come from inside the Earth, they're not from the
There's a dimensional warp that comes out of the bottom of the ocean in the Pacific, and that's where they come through.
Right. And so there's this idea of Earth rebelling against itself. And
or that we've at least made it. We've made it amenable to our. Right.
Caused it.
Yeah,
we caused it. But the Earth is now fighting against itself.
Sure.
And to that end, all of the fighting takes place in constant storming.
Yeah,
it's always raining or snowing or hurricaning or something.
And
there's
at night,
always a giant storm taking place. Because of the climate being all screwed up.
Diarrhea is like a storm inside your body. it's always at night. It's always, you know, there's always some sort of crazy weather going on. Or it's at the bottom of the ocean.
Right. So you need all the
3D is only going to make it darker.
You need all the visual clarity and brightness that you can get. And apparently 3D IMAX provides that. I don't know. I have only seen it in 2D, which I was able to see everything.
Right.
If you do not like the Transformers films because of their pulverizing style of editing, this is not that.
Yes. I definitely give this movie points for that.
Longer shots of fighting.
It's more fluid. You can.
As those fights go on, as more monsters fight more robots and they're doing it simultaneously,
right.
They cut back and forth between this monster fighting that robot and this other monster fighting this other robot. And sometimes that becomes visually incoherent because you're like, wait, now who's fighting? You know, because
they don't look different enough.
Not in the dark, not in the rain.
Yeah, yeah.
They do when you get a full shot of one.
Right.
In fact, the monsters are so great because they are, this is an homage to old school kaiju film.
Yeah, the film is dedicated to Ray Harryhausen and Ishiro Honda, who directed the original Gojira.
And so the monsters are very detailed and really, really creative, you know, creatively, you know, sort of extravagant looking monsters. Some of them call back to older kaiju that you've seen in older films, and that's so great.
That one with a kind of knifey head.
Yes.
I'm seeing
this again.
Well, I'm clearly seeing this again too, and believe me, I wanted to love it. I went in super excited. You and I have always shared a love of kaiju, and I'm totally into that, the old ones. And I don't know, I didn't have that experience, but it's because visually I wasn't able to take it in. I mean, it's worth mentioning the cast includes actors who are generally better than they are here. Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy, and Undeclared, and the original British Queer as Folk, is the leading man, and he's kind of a stiff. He's mainly a stiff as written. I don't necessarily pin it on him, but, you know, he's crazy worked out. You know, if you are an abs fan, you will be thrilled.
He has dozens of them.
Yes. He has all the abs.
He has more than all of them. He has extras.
And then Idris Elba plays, like, you know, Commando Cody, and I maintain, I know you think he's dreamy, which he is, but this is the worst performance I've ever seen him give, because he operates in two modes.
I'm a professional film critic, so I don't walk around talking about who's dreamy and who's not. I'll have you know.
Yeah, but you do, though.
Look,
anyway, Idris Elba operates in two.
Idris Elba is a fine actor and a handsome man.
You think he's a foine actor? He operates in two modes in this movie, which is mumbling whispery with intensity.
Get back from the mic. Don't do it in front of the mic.
Well, and then he starts shouting like that.
I knew what you were fixing to do. Yes. And you were going to blow everybody's ears.
No, I wasn't going to do that. I did enjoy Charlie Day and Bern Gorman.
Charlie Day's really funny.
As the comedy relief scientist. And Ron Perlman as the mobster. They're fun. And
He's not a mobster. He's a black market kaiju parts retailer.
He's a mobster.
Okay. He's a mobster.
He's in personal loans and politics.
No, part of the alternate economy.
What's the line from 16 Candles? Laundromats, something, and waste disposal, and I dabble a little bit in personal loans and politics. So yeah, Pacific Rim. If you are, you know, if you like big monster feet crushing Tokyo, this is your movie, but don't see it in 3D, or at least not in non-IMAX 3D.
Right.
You're not going to know what the heck's going on.
But you'll like it because the monsters. I posted a picture on my Facebook wall yesterday. I'm going to post it today before we post this podcast.
On the Linoleum Knife Facebook page.
Of our vintage kaiju collection.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's a small collection.
Yeah. Nothing
great. But it is terrific. Mm-hmm. And back when we used to go to Comic-Con.
Right. Before it was ruined.
Before it was ruined
by Hollywood.
By Hollywood.
The way they ruin everything.
I would always go to the Super 7 store booth. Super 7 started as a magazine. All devoted entirely to kaiju, and became a store in San Francisco, and they've got a website.
Not unlike Giant Robot.
They haven't put out an issue of the magazine in a long time. I don't think that became a thing that people, at least to my knowledge, they haven't put out an issue of the magazine in a long time.
If you don't know, no one does.
And
because Giant Robot was a magazine that became a store, also, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But Super 7, they're still a store. And they've got a great site where they sell new figures and toys and stuff. But they also sell vintage. And every year at Comic-Con, the guy who ran the place, he would bring a dozen or so vintage pieces down to Comic-Con. And in between moments of Christmas shopping for you on the vendor floor,
right,
I would always, my just one indulgence, like I never buy like things for myself.
No, you're a pretty ruthless editor of things we already have.
And right? But each year I would splurge and spend some pretty good money on a vintage, one of the vintage kaijus, to the point where every year he got to I would come up to the booth, he'd go, "Oh, you're back." Like, he would, like I was the guy who would buy a vintage one from him every year.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, actually, I think we should post their website on our wall just to show people what it is, because they're so great. And there were so many comments yesterday on the Facebook page about the thing, because people didn't know what they were.
Oh, wow.
And some people were like, how come they're so rainbow bright? Well, those old,
they're the children's
new ones,
toys.
Yeah, we have two new ones. You bought me a Gamera.
Right.
1 year, and then you got me a Megalon 1 year.
Yeah.
They're a little bigger than the standard old-fashioned size, and they are new, and they are realistically colored.
Right.
So they're dark green, dark brown, dark black, and, you know, some metallic spray, but generally they're
true to the original.
They're meant to look like the look in the movie.
Right.
But those old ones are meant to grab a child's attention from the bottom shelf of a toy store in Tokyo, and so
you have a rainbow-colored smog monster.
Yeah, well, actually, the smog monster was a newer one.
Oh, really? Okay.
But it was rainbow-colored, and it was a Super 7. They created it.
Ah, okay. Because the actual smog monster in Godzilla vs. Hedorah is kind of poop-colored.
He's a mound of sewage. Yeah. But all these old ones, they're like, they're orange, and they're red, and they're blue, and they're green, and they're pink, and it's like, none of them were those colors in the movie. But that's why the old ones are so brightly colored. And people are like, what is this cuteness that you have on your table there? So anyway, I could talk about Pacific Rim for the entire length of the podcast.
I'm sure you could.
But what we need to talk about next,
we have other hideous monsters to cover,
is Grown Ups 2.
That's the one.
Why don't you tell people, what is Grown Ups 2 about, Alonzo?
I'm still trying
to describe the plot.
The plot, yeah.
Of Grown Ups 2 for everybody.
I'm sure that the film critic who shall not be mentioned, who compared the first film to Romer, will try and make a case that this one is, I don't know.
That was Armand White, right?
Now you've named him, yes.
Well, good. Name him. He's crazy.
So maybe this one will be Fellini-esque? I don't know. This one, it is plotless, but not like good plotless in the way of something like Dazed and Confused. Although it does take place over the course of one day. But it tells you nothing about anything.
Bafflingly, it takes place over the course of one day.
So all those characters you loved so much in Grown Ups 2 are back.
Yes.
In Grown Ups 1.
Maya Rudolph. Maria Bello.
Salma Hayek.
No one else.
The Sandler now lives in the town where he grew up with his family. Kevin James is still too attached to his mother, so without telling his wife, he goes over to mom's place to watch soaps and be fed snacks. Salma Hayek spends the movie trying to hint to Adam Sandler that she's pregnant, but he's too dense to get it. Chris Rock has remembered their 20th anniversary, and his wife has not. And David Spade gets a visit from a hoodlum son he never knew he had. And then they mix it up some with some local obnoxious frat boys who are there. And then there's a big party at Sandler's house, and it's 80s themed, and everybody dresses like old music videos, and the J. Geils band shows up. The end. And all of that,
crushingly dull movie.
All of that would have been forgivable, along
No,
let me finish. All that would have been forgivable, and the film's general tastelessness would have been forgivable.
Right.
Had any of it been funny.
All right, here's the part that was funny.
The inflatable raft.
It was okay.
That was my one takeaway.
The inflatable raft was okay. The very next morning, after seeing this movie, I went to see The Conjuring.
Yes.
On the Warner Brothers.
Which we'll be talking about next week.
We'll talk about that next week. But Christian from the Schmoes, Christian and Ellis,
from the Schmoes,
they were there at The Conjuring. And Christian walks up to me and he goes, I sat in front of you last night, if you recall. I said, yes, of course. And he goes, you cracked me up. It was because you were stone silent throughout the entire film until Colin Quinn straddled the chocolate ice cream soft serve machine. And I said, that's because diarrhea is hilarious. Always.
No.
Now, there's a moment in the movie when Colin Quinn straddles an ice cream machine.
He works at the local like ice cream, you know, thing.
And in order to, he can't get it to work properly. Mm-hmm. So he's fiddling with the stuff in the back while he's straddling the front. And so it finally starts working, and the chocolate soft serve starts dripping out. In between his legs, so it looks like he's diarrhea-ing everywhere.
Ho, ho, ho. Hee, hee, hee.
It's pretty good.
No.
Here's why. I return you to That's My Boy.
Oh, God. Please, no.
No, just hear me out.
All right.
Obviously, you haven't read my review yet.
I have.
On movies.com.
I have read your review on movies.com.
Well, why don't you go back and reread it?
Drink.
That gag is funny because it was the kind of gag that you would have gotten in That's My Boy.
Yeah, well, which was also not
hang funny on, to everyone but you. The grown-up is talking right now. Get it?
See what I'm saying? The grown-up too.
See what I did there?
Why did I get married too?
This grown-up's talking about number two.
So you just hang, there we go.
You just hang back.
Waka waka.
Go on. I realized something about myself while watching Grown Ups 2. Mm. I realized that the reason I was laughing so hard during That's My Boy...
You were dropped on your head as a child.
...was because it was disgusting. This PG bit of family forgetfulness...
Forgettableness.
...is not... Forgetfulness. I said it right the first time. It's... dull. Mm-hmm. It's just boring. It doesn't allow itself, it cannot allow itself to be the debauched, depraved, offensive, repulsive thing that That's My Boy was. Nobody saw That's My Boy.
But that wasn't funny either.
All right,
finish.
I'm going to talk to the end of what I'm going to say.
Okay.
And then you can say something.
Fine, go.
Let me get there.
All right.
Dang. Interrupter face. I can be shocked into a laugh, but I can't be bored into one.
Granted.
That's what I was getting to. If this had been That's My Boy, Colin Quinn would have been actually diarrheaing onto a naked grandma's boobs. And then Adam Sandler would think it was ice cream and just motorboat her. And then that was... And when I say that, I'm telling you stuff that really does...
Practically
happen. It's the equivalent of what actually happens, and That's My Boy. Maybe the most repulsive comedy I've seen in years. And that is why... Like I sat through it going, oh my God, this is repulsive. Oh, this is so terrible. And so that was what my reaction was. I am somewhat ashamed of myself to this day because of it. But I bet if I saw it on cable again, I would laugh all over again. It's Sandler only works. That lowbrow stuff only works when you take it all the way.
I think that
even if it's not inherently funny, even if it's trite, there's a level of disgust that can make you laugh along.
I understand what you're saying, because yes. I, after all, laughed at movie 43.
I sort of did, too.
For the very same reason. Yeah, yeah. I was shocked into a laugh. Like, oh, my God, what? Yeah. You know, Sandler's level of that doesn't do it for me, because Sandler, whether in a movie this innocuous or in a movie that's as vile as That's My Boy, does it from this creepy place of white, middle-aged, rich guy privilege that always freaks me out.
There is that.
This movie, you know, it's aimed at a family audience, purports to be, you know, it has one of his usual,
God, with the family. Yeah.
But here's the thing. At the same time, it so objectifies all the women. Like, this movie cannot leer at Maria Bello's cleavage enough. Or at, or of, like, random, you know, characters, like a Russian dance instructor or whatever.
Right.
You know, while at the same time making penis jokes about the woman who's a bodybuilder and has, like, a, you know, a bodybuilder body.
Yes.
And then whenever there's any hint of male body appearing at all, whether, you know, like everybody's grossed out over the gym teacher whose shorts are too short and he's climbing a rope, or the male cheerleaders who are, you know, rubbing their junk on the windshield and stuff. The movie couldn't be more like,
Men's bodies are disgusting.
Men's bodies are disgusting. Right. Women's bodies are either smoking hot and to be drooled over, or unappealing and thus the butt of the joke.
Right.
And it just makes me crazy. There's just he is so entitled. I just want to punch him in the face sometimes. And the thing about Sandler is he can do better and has done better. But here's the thing. I mean, you know, this Grown Ups 2 exists to punish us for two reasons.
Yes.
One, because Jack and Jill and That's My Boy both tanked.
Yeah.
And because, two, serious Sandler in movies like Spanglish or Punch Drunk Love or Rain Over Me or Funny People does not burn down the wickets.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Exactly. So it's like, all right, fine. You want you know, half mentally challenged Adam Sandler pooping on things? That's what you're going to get in spades. Yes. This is his first sequel, even though it seems like he's been making the same movie over and over again for the last 15 years. This is technically his first sequel.
Oh, and the reason is because he needs a big hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there is such a scam going on. How these movies, if you look them up on Box Office Mojo, the reported budget, which is probably, I'm sure, always a low ball, is like $70, $80 million for these movies.
Yeah.
These movies are not set in outer space.
Right.
These movies are not, I mean, apart from the twinning effects in Jack and Jill, there's not that much going on in these movies that would require them to cost that much. Yeah. On top of that, you add some of the most flagrant product placement you've ever seen in movies.
Remember when we were at Kmart?
We were at Kmart this morning at Kmart, because Kmart has all the things at Kmart.
Right. Remember when we had lunch at Kmart? They have such good chicken chow mein at Kmart lunch. The Kmart lunch counter.
That was intended to be a joke, I think.
Do they have a lunch counter at Kmart anymore?
Well, our,
back in the
our,
day,
our Target has a Pizza Hut in it, so I'm sure they got something at a Kmart.
Probably.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
I mean, remember back when you were a kid and you would go to Woolworths.
The lunch counter.
They had the lunch counter.
That was. I don't know that those exist so much anymore.
They don't exist really anywhere.
Yeah,
Highland Park Pharmacy in Dallas. Yeah,
I just heard a really interesting story about the Highland Park Cafe, which I'll tell you offline.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm sure they've all got
the old cafeteria.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've got a combination Taco Bell and Pizza Hut or whatever. You know, these mega marts now.
Right.
But yeah, you remember all the Royal Caribbean cruise line stuff and Jack and Jill.
Yeah.
So that's an extra source of income. So Sandler and Dennis Dugan and his usual, like, you know, accomplices in these crap comedies.
Yeah.
His crew, Nick Swardson, who really needs to be sent to an island at this point. And that, you know, Alan Covert, all those guys are making out like bandits with these just rotten movies that cost money and make money.
They are bad. This is a bad movie.
Yeah. But it's
maybe
it's going to win the weekend, probably, or at least it's going to beat Pacific Rim, unfortunately.
Although I don't care about this sort of thing in general, I am currently looking at Box Office Mojo. As of Sunday morning, Despicable Me 2 is number one.
Like, that's winning the weekend, yeah.
$45 million. Grown Ups 2, $42.5 million. Pacific Rim, $38.3 million.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, thanks, America. You've done it again.
For nothing. Fruitvale Station.
Fruitvale Station, which, wow, well.
Very timely.
I was going to say, yeah, with the Zimmerman verdict coming down yesterday.
On New Year's Day, in the early morning hours of New Year's Day, 2009.
2008, I think.
2009.
Okay.
At a Bay Area Rapid Transit station, the Fruitvale station, police murdered an unarmed young black man named Oscar Grant.
Right.
One of them got convicted of like involuntary manslaughter.
He was apparently reaching for his taser and pulled out his gun instead. That's the story.
I don't know what.
That's his story.
Okay. This is the first film from a director, writer, director named Ryan Coogler. And it is the story, just sort of what happens to Oscar Grant in the days leading up to
the day. It's all set.
Is it all one day?
Apart from the flashback, like
Grown Ups 2.
Yes, that's their one point of common interest.
One day. You see, you know, his life. And he is not a movie martyr.
He's no saint.
He's a young guy. He's already been in jail at least once.
For selling drugs.
He's trying not to go back to that. He's got a girlfriend and a kid, a little daughter, 3, 4, whatever. And a mom, played by Octavia Spencer.
The girlfriend is played by Melanie Diaz.
Michael B. Jordan.
Yes, from The Wire and Friday Night Lights and Chronicle.
Yeah. And so what you get is this very sort of almost Dardenne Brothers sort of approach to, and I'm talking just in a cinematic approach.
It's sort of kind like of a minimalist realism.
Pulled back, realistic, you know, social realism sort of style.
Yeah.
And very restrained and not at all histrionic on any level. And I think that's a really wise choice on this guy's part, because somebody already made Do the Right Thing.
Right.
And if he had gone down that big sort of, you know, explosive path, it would really just suffer in comparison.
The story is powerful enough that you don't have to go to 11 in telling it.
Yeah. Now, Do the Right Thing goes to 11, but does it so well.
Right, but it's also telling a fictionalized story.
Yeah, it's a fictional story, and it's about a whole community. This is just about one guy.
Yeah.
And so it's a small, kind of intimate film.
Yeah.
But basically, I was comparing it to Do the Right Thing, because you've got, you know, like African American filmmakers and
injustice
and the cinematic approach to injustice.
Sure,
you know.
No, I understand. I'm saying that I'm agreeing with you that the style is different in how they're.
So anyway, I just drew a blank. Pick it up.
Well, okay. So over the course of this day, we really kind of get to know. I mean, obviously. Who knows how true? Only people who knew this guy could say how true this movie is to him. But the character that is created as we watch the film is somebody who has made mistakes in the past, still has the potential to make them, but we see him actively trying not to. We see him trying to pursue a better path. We see through his relationships, I think really, Jordan gives a great performance. And you know, people will be talking about this come the end of the year. But we learn as much about the character through the relationships with the three women in his life, namely his girlfriend, his mother, and also his grandmother. And the way they handle him, in that they clearly love him. They know his best sides, and they know that he's a loving father and a loving son and an okay boyfriend, you know.
He's an okay boyfriend
when he's, you know, he's not always the most reliable guy.
Right.
But, you know, they there's a lot, you can tell the tough love that's happening there.
He can be a bit of a screw-up. He has screwed up.
So he's tempted
to screw up still.
Right. So you can tell, like, when they talk to him, they're always sort of like asking him the tough questions and making, you know, trying, you know, double checking
that problematic relationship with impulsive decision making skills.
Exactly. Yes. But at the same time, obviously, has a lot of good qualities and whatnot. And so the movie kind of, in a way, if you separate it from the actual real life tragedy that's being, you know, conveyed here, it really sort of captures the notion of telling a person's life story in a way in just out of one random day of his life.
Yes.
You know, over the course of that day,
unfortunately, the day he dies.
The day he dies, in this case, the actions he take, the decisions he make, the way he makes, the way he interacts with other people, tells you a lot about this person. And it does so, like, you know, on a very kind of micro level, but at the same time, against the larger picture of how, you know, what black men in this country face on a day-to-day basis and how institutionalized racism, you know, stacks the deck against them in terms of, you know, incarceration or just how they're being treated by the police, how they function on a day-to-day basis. And so it's really fascinating to see that from this new black filmmaker who makes a very exciting debut here.
In between the time you and I wrote our reviews and doing this podcast, the Zimmerman trial has just ended.
Yeah, yesterday.
And he is found not guilty.
Right.
Which, I can't even wrap my head around.
No,
this.
I know.
Like, I don't even understand. It blows my mind how this can be.
Just the fact, I mean, not to get too far into the weeds here, but just the notion
of... If you have an opinion that is different from ours, we don't want to hear it. How do you like them apples?
The police told this guy, do not pursue him, stand down, do not go after him, we'll take care of it. And he ignored that and goes and shoots him anyway. Like, that should be enough. That right there should be enough.
Yes.
So, yeah. That's a whole other can of worms.
Yes. All right. What should
is that it this week? Is that
just on that note, what's your DVD pick, Alonzo? What you got?
My DVD pick is the Gamera trilogy.
Hooray!
Which was the, you know, Gamera. Obviously, if you watch
Friend to All Children.
If you watch Mystery Science Theater, you've seen the old '60s Gameras. There was a Gamera reboot in the '90s where he sort of, you know, was kind of brought back with contemporary sensibilities and contemporary special effects, and it's, you know,
one of the first films you and I went to see together when we first met.
That's right, in Dallas.
Was Gamera, Guardian of the Universe.
Right.
Yeah.
And so just for that reason, it has a sentimental favorite, but but we like kaiju, and it was cool to see a '90s kaiju movie where they were using digital effects and using, you know, sort of more contemporary practical effects, but at the same time it felt very true to the spirit of the fun old one. So there's a Blu-ray set with all three of the '90s rebooted Gamera movies. That's my pick this week.
I just went blank. Again, it's too early for me to be doing this.
And unfortunately, I wish there were...
Oh, here's a new episode. Bibbs came at me.
Oh, right, about you said Godzilla was friend to children.
I said Godzilla was friend to all children, and he goes, oh, that was Gamera. I was like, it was also Godzilla. As soon as Gamera showed up...
Gamera wasn't friend to children immediately. I think that took one or two movies.
Well, whatever. As soon as Gamera showed up, Godzilla changed his tune,
yeah,
and became a communicator with children,
right,
and friendly to children, and they would, you know, talk to him and
had a child of his own.
They would tell the adults, you know, Godzilla wants this to happen, you know, like, so there's room for more kaiju to be friend to children,
right?
I want that plainly established.
I wanted to throw in real quick. We
talk about the tough issues on this podcast.
Yes, we're breaking it down. I on a sad note, I wish I had a good DVD recommendation for the late Corey Monteith.
But he wasn't in any good movies.
No, not really. And he's not one of the better things in the Glee concert films. I don't really want to point out that I would make that my recommendation. But, you know, he's a very talented guy, and I think I had a lot of promise as a comedic, you know, romantic lead, and he passed away all too quickly. And you know, it's another sad addiction story. And I hope that if anything good comes out of it, is that other people who are his peers and contemporaries, you know, get help if they need it.
Mm.
What's your DVD pick this week?
I have another tie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wild Strawberries. This came out on, I think it was Blu-ray, in January. It's been a while, but
okay.
But that's such a great movie, Ingmar Bergman, 1957.
You're late getting to it because your clock has no hands.
Correct.
little joke for those of you who've seen Wild Strawberries. Oh. Nerd.
Ingmar Bergman got jokes. Professor Victor traveling to accept an honorary degree. Victor
Sjostrom.
Sjostrom.
Yeah. Which, interestingly, I saw a movie at Outfest where one of the characters is a pianist in a silent movie theater. And one of the movies that he accompanies is the classic Lillian Gish film, The Wind, which was directed by Victor Sjostrom.
Oh. And the... he has to, you know, he goes through his life. He has to learn sort of how to make peace with all the things that have happened to him.
Yeah, he's close to the end of his life, and he sort of on this trip he kind of revisits his own past and reconciles with it.
It is the warmer side of Ingmar Bergman.
Yes,
and really beautiful and just the kind of movie you can just watch again and again as you get older. It'll just get more and more depressing, and so
no, I don't think so. I think it's one of his films that actually has some sort of hope for the human race.
Yes, the other one that comes out this week, or next week, I don't remember. The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Woo! Charles B. Pierce, is that his name?
1976. And
a big hit in Southern drive-ins.
It took me years to see this movie because obviously it came out in 1976. Uh-huh. I was too young to see it at the time.
Is this a home invasion movie?
And it is about a serial killer that stalks Texarkana.
Right.
And he was never caught. And he wears a bag over his head.
Yes. Oh, Strangers.
So it was a precursor for me as a child. I remember as a little kid.
The newspaper ads.
Being terrified by the newspaper ads.
I remember those too.
For this movie.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, that seems so scary. And he's still out there and he might be in my backyard. And I really want to see this movie. But you know, you're a child.
Right.
Rated R.
I believe Dawn Wells of Gilligan's Island fame is in this movie. Yeah.
So, I eventually did see it. What's great about it is that the shots, you know, they shot it like in Texarkana.
Right.
And Texarkana in 1976.
It's kind of like Bernie.
looks like Texarkana in 1946. So,
very easy to get the period detail.
Very easy to get the period detail right. Anyway, it's kind of a movie, but I'm super into it.
Well, and Pierce is kind of an interesting figure in gut bucket cinema because he also had a big hit with The Legend of Boggy Creek.
Oh, God. Now, that one I did see when I was a kid because they played at one of those Saturday kid matinees.
Uh-huh.
At that point in my childhood, the single most terrifying thing I had ever seen.
Really?
Oh, man. Have you seen it?
Once, a long time ago.
All right. I don't really remember. When you're a little kid and you've got Bigfoot stalking people's houses at night, standing outside their windows, that's real scary.
Okay.
Yeah, it scared the stuff out of me when I was little.
Speaking of Mystery Science Theater, they did Boggy Creek 2, The Legend Continues.
Yes, which is not so good. Not so good, yeah.
Letters?
I got some.
All right.
I got three.
All right.
Hey, David Alonzo. Top 10 lists are hard. So hard that I haven't attempted this until now. I'm relatively new to exploring cinema, in quotes. I'm 21 and currently in my third year of a film VFX animation gaming. They have gaming degrees?
I'm sure they
just
do.
Just designing them, I guess. In New Zealand. So we have a listener in New Zealand.
Wow. It's tomorrow when you're listening to this.
I find your critique on films extremely insightful, and it has helped me look at films from a perspective that I may not have gotten had I not started listening to you guys.
Oh, thanks, Kiwi.
Yeah. Dave, I love it when you have control of the cassette tapes for the show.
That's right.
Because I'm the best at it. And when you talk about music, Alonzo, your episode-to-episode reviews of Mad Men are fantastic. I think television as a whole may be trumping film right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
It is. And thanks for the Stooges birthday message. You Facebooked me in March, so you're Facebook friends with him.
I guess so. You're welcome.
Maybe I am too. It made my day. And I'm sorry if I don't know that I am or not, because there are too many people
on Facebook. It's hard to keep track, I know.
Here are my top 10 with a brief explanation why, alongside Midnight in Paris. He says, going back in time to chill with famous artists. Yes. Mulholland Drive. I like to imagine this and Blue Velvet existing within the world of Twin Peaks. Note, the old people at the end made my girlfriend cry for hours. Blade Runner. How would it feel to be a 6-year-old robot man-child? Spring Breakers. In hindsight, this is the best movie I've seen this year. It's a trip into a saturated neon bubblegum hell, wub-wubbing your soul until it cracks. Looper. Thank you very much for being right.
Oh, shush, shush.
It felt like it was tailor-made with all the nerdy things I like. Drive. Is on the list until a sequel comes out with the girls from Spring Breakers as the villains. Metropolis, Omega Man, strictly for the albino black vampires. And he says, and it will do until I get my own I Am Legend adaptation featuring lesbian vampires. Clockwork Orange, Black Sunday. He said, something about Mario Bava got to me recently. Thanks, Clint. Right. Clint Milne.
Alrighty, Clint.
Interesting discussion on the above film on this week's podcast, Going Places. The subject line of this next...
Wait, we have the knife? We have not knifed Clint.
Oh, I'm sorry, we need to knife you, Clint.
I'm taking off for Looper and Drive, so...
Well, then it's 95% because I cancel you out on both of those.
Fine.
Because they're both great. The next letter, subject line, Going Places.
Okay.
Interesting discussion on the above film on this week's podcast. If you think the sexual politics in that, it's called Les Valseuses over here, which translates literally as a slang word for testicles, are bad. Check out Ménage, which is called Tenue de Soirée.
Yeah.
Bertrand Blier's 1986 film starring, you've seen Ménage.
I have seen Ménage.
I have not. Also starring Depardieu, Miu Miu, and Michelle Blanc. Blanc and Miu Miu are a deeply unhappy married couple into whose lives Depardieu stumbles. He's a petty criminal, but charming with it. Again with that.
Yeah.
The film doesn't go how you'd expect.
No.
As Depardieu decides to try and seduce Blanc rather than Miu Miu. It's as shocking as Going Places, but without so much misogyny. Definitely worth a look.
Well, you saw the one sheet that I have for it.
Yes.
Miu Miu is sitting on a park bench looking forlorn, holding a leash that has like a little French bulldog on it.
Yeah.
And the French bulldog is being humped by a giant Great Dane.
Yeah. An interesting footnote. Both of those Blier films play uncut on network TV here in the UK in the 1990s.
Rule Britannia.
If they'd been in the English language, people would have been up in arms here. But subtitled films seem to get a real pass in terms of envelope-pushing content. My question is, do you think there is a similar attitude to subtitled films in the U.S., where they're allowed to get away with more because of the great unwashed public is unlikely to see them? Thanks, guys. All the best. James.
I suspect that it boils down to whether or not they opt for a rating, because I think that subtitled movies get as hard a time as anybody else from the MPAA, but also...
Often they get released unrated.
But they often get released unrated because the threat of having an unrated film is, you can't advertise in certain papers or whatever, but because these movies tend to get much smaller releases in certain kinds of movie theaters anyway, they're like, we don't care.
Right. And he throws in a PS. The next best thing was not Schlesinger's last film.
Really?
That was, in fact, the even worse. An Eye for an Eye, where Sally Field
that
goes
was,
all
that was before wish. That.
Are you sure?
Hang on. I'm going to look it up right now.
All right.
I'm almost positive that maybe it opened later in the UK because they were so embarrassed by it.
Yeah. I'm going to read the next letter while you look up that information.
Okay.
It's a real short one.
While I ask Emmerich.
This is from Eric. I hope I haven't shared...
Okay, Next Best Thing was 2000. Eye for an Eye was 1996.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so...
Hey, James, guess what?
Wrong.
This is from Eric. I hope I haven't shared this with y'all before. Many years ago, C, I'm not sure who.
Like initial C?
Initial C.
Okay.
Wanted a lasagna pan for Christmas, and the one I ordered him came with a free spatula. The spatula was called Lasagna Turner. So that's been a common drag name in our household ever since. Give it up for Miss Lasagna Turner. And that is in reference to the subject line of the email, which is, give it up for Miss Taco Realness. What is a better name? Miss Taco Realness or Miss Lasagna Turner?
I could see them doing a sister act. I don't know.
Yeah. I would like it. Thank you, Eric, for that letter.
Yes.
I would like it if other people who wrote in would give us their most personal and intimate lasagna stories.
Or drag names.
If you, drag names are less interesting than
lasagna stories. Fair enough.
So if you have a lasagna story.
We need to know.
That we need to read on the air. Please tell us about it. Maybe it was an incident in which you had a particularly good lasagna. Or perhaps there was a lasagna disaster.
Or you want to weigh in on the great ricotta versus cottage cheese controversy.
There's no debate.
Shockingly, there is.
There is no debate.
No, look, as far as I'm concerned, it's ricotta or don't bother. Don't waste my time.
You're not even taking it far enough. All right? First of all, cottage cheese is not in your lasagna. Let's just get that straight. Secondly, ricotta is in your lasagna. And it better be whole milk ricotta.
Mm-hmm.
The full fat.
Yes.
None of this, part skim. Skim ricotta.
Reduced fat.
Yeah. You.
No. Lard it on.
I know how to cook. All right.
So Nigella's not futzing around with any reduced
fat. You listen to me. Full fat ricotta. You want to come at me about this? Try. Yeah.
Come at Dave White at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us your top 10 list, your bottom 10 list, questions, comments, anecdotes, anything.
Lasagna stories.
Lasagna stories. All righty. I got to get back to Outfest. My highlight.
I got to go back to bed.
Yes, no.
After
lucky
a
you. My highlight yesterday was I got to do I moderated an LGBT horror panel with Kimberly Pierce, whose remake of Carrie comes out this fall. Jeffrey Reddick, who created the Final Destination franchise. Chris Landon, who wrote the last three Paranormal Activity movies. And our friend Brian Fuller, who created Hannibal. And it's funny, at one point I finally had to say, you guys can talk to each other. You know, you don't have to just answer my questions. And they went, oh! And then that kind of picked things up.
Has none of them ever been on a panel before?
I don't know.
Fuller's been on panels.
He's been on plenty of panels. I think
that man owns Comic-Con every time he goes.
Totally. I know. He's doing two this year.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know why they were feeling all shy. But once they opened up, they had a great time. And it was interesting to hear Brian and Kimberly's sort of parallel and slightly differing takes on Carrie, since they've both done remakes.
Oh, yeah, because he did the TV.
Right. Remake. About 10 years. He goes, and I said, like, a few years ago, he goes, it was 10 years ago. And I said, oh, my God, I'm so old. I went to the premiere of that. I don't even remember. It was that long ago. And then today I'm doing an animation panel with Dean DeBlois, our buddy, who has How to Train Your Dragon 2 coming out, which, did you see the teaser they put out?
No, not yet.
It's pretty impressive. And Suzanne Berge over at DreamWorks, who produced Kung Fu Panda 2, and she's working on, she's producing Home, which comes out next year. And anyway, I don't know why I'm saying all this, because by the time you hear this episode, this panel will have already happened. But anyway,
too late to have attended it.
Cool Outfest things are happening.
Yes.
If you are
so many
in,
of them.
If you're in Los Angeles and you want to come check it out, it's at outfest.org. They've got the full schedule. And even if it tells you that a show is sold out, get in the rush line, because very often there are tickets that become available at showtime. We hold a certain number of tickets for our Outpass holders, and those rarely get claimed in their entirety. So there's almost always tickets to spare. So come, you know.
Go stand in line outside where it's hot and wait for a ticket.
Bring a water and, you know.
And an umbrella.
And wear a
hat. And a personal fan. And yeah.
Okay, it's not that bad.
It's super totally that bad outside.
All right, fine.
It needs to be Christmas.
chill yourself however you do that best. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and check out our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. Again, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys at the Movies.
Okay, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli and Cooking with Malcolm Ingram. Those are podcasts that have not podcasted in forever.
That's true, yes. But, but you know, it's a good time to get caught up.
Okay, yes, it is.
If you want to be up to speed, you know, they're giving you plenty of time to catch up on the...
between seasons.
On the classic episodes. Fat Guys in the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack. We need to get Jack on the show. I didn't realize that
We have a backup list.
I know, we have a lot of people that we need to get on the show. I know. I did not realize that Jack was an associate producer of Continental.
I found that out last night myself.
Because when we saw it, didn't have credits yet. Credits, so good for him. The Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. Thanks to Christopher, by the way, who was doing Podcast Appreciation Month and did a very nice write-up on us. That was very sweet.
Yes, that was really nice of you, Christopher.
We linked to it on the Linoleum Knife podcast page on Facebook, which if you have not liked yet, please do. Dave is still gauging our friends versus the that other podcast.
I'm fixing to give up that, though.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't, I mean...
You're going to let go, let go?
I might let go. I it just, it's, you know, it's... The Secret tells us that... I don't know what The Secret tells us.
Yeah, I have no idea. Fair enough. But like us anyway. We would appreciate it. You can subscribe to the show for free on iTunes. And if you want to leave us a positive review there, that would be nifty. It helps people find the show. You can stream us at Stitcher Radio, where you can also leave us a nice comment, and thelounge.com. Again, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com. Thanks to the Derek and Romaine Show for having us on once a month. We just did it again this week, and it's always a lot of fun. So,
and I was just on the LeVar and Dukes show that's out of D.C. It's like a sports talk radio show, like Friday afternoons at, in the middle of the afternoon or something, and they had me on talking about movies. I had a good time.
And they want you back.
It was a bro down.
All right.
Yeah.
You can bro it up with the best. And again, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Next week, possibly exciting guests. Possibly not, but will be exciting either way. Well, don't exciting get their hopes putting up. Too fine a point on it.
Don't write a check your mouth can't
we
catch.
We will be adequately listenable.
Yes.
Catch you next time.
Goodbye.